It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
It's a great football team with a lot of moral fiber and a lot of character, and they showed it.
Shout, a Buffalo football podcast, hosted by Matt Parrino and Ryan Talbot.
No place else you'd rather be than right here, right now. When it's too tough for them, it's just right.
Presented by Syracuse.com and NYUp.com.
The Bills make me wanna. Yeah!
From Paradise here in Orlando, Florida, taking a little bit of a break from the Ritz-Carlton, JW Marriott, where this year's NFL's owners meetings are happening. This is actually my hotel, the Fairfield Inn and Suites, right by SeaWorld, which is right behind me. So if you hear some screaming in the background, people like the roller coaster drop is right behind me. So that's that. I'm Matt Parrino. He is Ryan Talbot. This is the Shout Buffalo Bills football podcast. Got a lot to get into. We've actually, you know, the trip out here, Ryan, it depends on the year, kind of shifts around in terms of what we're coming here to accomplish. This year was going to be the first time we got a chance to talk to Brandon Bean and Sean McDermott since all of the big pivotal roster decisions that they've made over the course of the last 3 or 4 weeks. And they had a lot to say about it. We're going to get into some of that right now. How are you, my friend?
I'm doing great. Loving the Florida Preno vibes over there. Lot to get into, though, with the Bills based on the conversations with Brandon Bean and Sean McDermott.
Yeah, so I guess before we get started, Randy over here on YouTube wants to know your thoughts on the St. Bonaventure Bonnies skipping the NIT. The big time.
Yeah. Well, listen, that's why the AD is now out of a job and why he resigned. He kind of put his foot in his mouth multiple times talking about he didn't understand the importance of the NIT. Wouldn't you rather be on that list with those bigger squads? But St. Bonaventure is not a major team. We are, you know, mid-major all the way, and you don't turn down opportunities like that. So when he came back the next day and said it doesn't matter to the players and the team as much as it does the alumni, I think that was probably the writing on the wall to kind of move on from this guy.
So AJ Sabalski checking in, former producer for the Shout Buffalo Bills podcast, now has his own show over on the Buffalo Rumblings channel. He checks in and he wants to know about my rental car. All right, so here's the deal with the rental car. Funny story. I gave Mr. Beauvais a ride home from back to home. I didn't drive him back to Buffalo. That was a couple weeks ago. I gave him a ride and back to his hotel after everything kind of wrapped up over at the Ritz. We'll be back there tonight. There's a big kind of like gala that they throw. I get a chance to kind of talk to, not for media purposes, but just kind of mingle with coaches, ownership, executives, etc. And he took a picture of me in my rental car. Let me see if I can get it up here.
It's good.
You know, technology, Ryan, is it going to cooperate? We never really do know, but I want to try it right here. I think we got it here. Let's see. All right, can you see it?
Oh yeah,
you can
look
see
at
it.
That ride.
So it is just red as red can be. And, you know, sometimes I do all of my deals on Priceline for the rental cars. And this was the exact same as Toyota Corolla. So when in Rome, you grab the Mustang. Why not? Right. Like it's sleek. It's stylish. I will say though, I texted my wife and I said, you don't have to worry about me ever having a midlife crisis. I don't get it. Like, it's cool. Like, it goes fast, but I'm not a car guy. So it's kind of wasted on me. I hate to say that.
No, I get it. I mean, I think you were pretty impressed with the Tesla that you drove when we had the show out in Verona. So I wouldn't say you're not a car guy altogether, but the muscle cars, the fast cars, yeah, small, hard to get into, lower to the ground. I get that.
Yeah, back problems. And when I drove Bove home, Jay Skursky had to get in the back seat. I have a picture of that. You can find that on my Instagram account. It was a tight squeeze for Mr. Skursky. So shout out to him. Bove was appreciative of not having to get back in the backseat. All right. So I want to start with Trey White and Micah Hyde, because I think Micah Hyde's kind of lingering out there with this potential retirement. You know, Brandon Bean said last night that he doesn't have an indication one way or the other, and kind of feels like, based on conversations he's had with his agent, which haven't been a ton, but there's been a few conversations, that the door is still open to Micah Hyde playing next season. Asked if he would, you know, close the door. He basically said, no, I'm not going to close the door on that. And I want to bring this up. When Brandon Bean started talking about Tre'Davious White, and, you know, obviously the Bills just released him. He has had a couple of reported visits. He made it a point to say, he told them, just because this move is now doesn't mean it doesn't work out for us to get you back in Buffalo. It's just right now, due to the rules, we've got to get under the cap. So I think in a perfect world, and especially with the way that Sean McDermott talked about Trey White today, we'll get into that in a minute. This is a situation where, whether it's now, whether it's down the road, like, I don't think the door is necessarily shut on either of these two guys. If White or if Hyde wants to continue playing, or maybe for Tre'Davious White to return at some point.
Yeah, so starting with White, you know, it all depends on the rehab process, how far away he is from playing, the timeline there. I know he's gone on some free agent visits, but it wouldn't surprise me if he was sitting out there on the market for some time until he is kind of cleared and ready to go. And for the Bills, you never know what kind of cap space they're going to have, what kind of cornerback situations they may have. If an injury pops up early in the season, is he someone you want to bring back? It makes a lot of sense. He knows the terminology, he knows the system, he's thrived in the system. Being the first pick of Sean McDermott, being a role model, a leader in the locker room and on the field, it wouldn't surprise me one bit if this wasn't the end of Trey White in Buffalo. And like you said, maybe it's not this year, maybe it's next year, 2 years down the road, sometime before he calls it a career. Micah Hyde's a little trickier, because Micah Hyde has been you know, he's mentioned that he's considered retirement. It's something on his mind. And until we know what his plans are for this year, I don't think it's necessarily something down the road he could come back. But this year, again, is he someone that wants to skip training camp, skip that grind, come somewhere and play in season? If so, Buffalo, once again, would make a lot of sense in terms of knowing the system. But he could just wait around until an injury pops up somewhere around the league if he wants to give it one more go, sign with a contender, and try to play there. So I like the fact that the Bills aren't closing the door on it. I think that Micah Hyde right now, the fact that he hasn't necessarily been linked to any teams, gone on any visits, tells you that he's just in a spot right now where he truly doesn't know what he wants to do this season.
For Trey White, I think that, first of all, the backdrop of all of this has always been what he means inside the building, right? Like, we've mentioned it on the show multiple times. It's not just like his personality or his production when he was healthy. I mean, you go back to that 2019 season when he was a first team all pro. I mean, you're talking about one of the best cornerbacks in the league at that stage. It's just been a departure from that over the last 3 years. And it's not his fault necessarily. You know, two big injuries that kind of pop up, and Sean McDermott kind of indicated that, you know, it's almost a tragedy in the sense that the injuries happened, and he also alluded to the fact that you don't know where Trey would be today had the injuries not happened, but also where the Bills might be if those injuries hadn't happened. You know, you think about the two biggest games the Buffalo Bills have played over the last 2 years. They've both been against the Kansas City Chiefs, one in KC, one in Buffalo, both in the playoffs, in the divisional round, both losses for the Bills without Tre'Davious White. And, you know, maybe if he never gets hurt, and you never want to play the woulda, shoulda, coulda game, but maybe if he never gets hurt, and he's available in those games, there's a different outcome. You never know. So I think that there's pain there. It's a player that obviously means a great deal to Sean McDermott, and having that conversation, it's the nature of the NFL, he said. And at some point, you're going to have to make a hard decision on even the players that have meant as much as Trey has to the Bills. I still go back to the decision and say that I believe that it was the right one, but what a story it would be if we fast forward, maybe not just this offseason, but next offseason or the offseason after that, if the Bills could get Trey White back.
Yeah, the woulda, coulda, shouldas, I get that you don't want to talk about it, but it's a valid talking point. And even if we don't talk about the games that he missed and how the games could have turned out differently had he played, if he didn't suffer this injury this year against Miami in general, I think there's a good chance he's still on this Bills roster because of how important he's been. And he's been that cornerback one pre-injury, and he was trying to work his way back to that. So had he not suffered the injury in season against Miami, I wouldn't have been surprised if the Bills renegotiated the deal, figured something out to keep him on the roster. I think the availability aspect of it, though, the fact that you could free up $10 million post June 1st, you had to get cap compliant. There was a lot of moves that needed to be made. So because of the injury, it made a lot of sense to move on from him now. But you know, like any good GM, you don't close the door on players who have provided so much value to your team. And I know it wasn't a Brandon Bean pick. Bean joined the Bills a few weeks after that draft was over, but he meant a lot to Brandon Bean. And we saw today how much he meant to Sean McDermott.
Got an update on where the Bills are against the salary cap. Interestingly enough, the Austin Johnson deal, which is reportedly worth 1 year and $3.5 million, according to Ian Rappaport. We're going to talk a lot about Austin Johnson here in a second, what he means, where they're at in the build at defensive tackle. We'll get into that in a moment. But I think it's interesting that Brandon Bean gave the update on the cap. The Bills are at about $6 or $7 million, somewhere in that range with cap space. And that depends on how they structure the deal for Austin Johnson. It could include void years. And if it does, that could lessen the cap hit this year. And it's something that I feel like, you know, teams got to really be careful how they use these void years. You look at the numbers that just came out on Shaq Barrett in Miami. He got a 1 year deal worth around $7 or $8 million, but a lot of that's getting pushed off into future years. And now it's not a massive number, but the more you kind of add up these void years, the more that dead money kind of piles up in future years. It gets kind of dangerous. They're going to get the $10 million to use post June 1st after the Trey White move. Happens, but Brandon Bean also made another good point about the salary cap yesterday, Ryan. You don't think about it now, but with the extended practice squad numbers of 16 players, you got to allocate $3 to $3.5 million on your practice squad, then about $4-ish to $5-ish million on your rookie class, depending on how many picks the Bills end up making. 11 draft picks is going to be a little bit more costly than usual.
Yeah, if they make all 11, and I, you know,
for sure,
it wouldn't surprise me one bit if he moves some picks around, trades up in on day two at some point, or moves some picks to next year. But yeah, between the practice squad, between the rookie class, there goes a lot of that Trey White money right there. You need some money for in season if an injury pops up. There's a lot to be done there. So while I'm not going to sit here and say the Bills are done in free agency, they're going to try to get guys at that 1.79 number, that, you know, the vet minimum type. They're done making any kind of splashy moves. I feel comfortable saying that. And, you know, Austin Johnson might not be a splash move to some fans, but it almost takes one tech off my board in terms of the first 2 days, maybe even early on day three of the draft. And I know it's just a 1 year deal. And, you know, you have two aging players between him and DaQuan Jones. But even with the Bills rotating so many players, that ends up kind of eliminating a need there. But in terms of the cap space, $6 to $7 million, it's not a lot. The Bills are going to probably keep a lot of that for, like, the purposes we just talked about. With combine it with the Trey White money, you're looking at some vet minimum signings between now and the draft and after the draft as well. But between the draft and those UDFAs, that's going to fill in a lot of those other spots on the 90-man roster.
Let's get into what Austin Johnson is to you when you think about this defensive line. You know, obviously, DaQuan Jones and Ed Oliver, they're going to own the lion's shares of the snaps on that defensive line. But my first dive on Johnson was I kind of came away from it like, especially when I saw the 3.5 number and the fact that it's not a minimum deal, I was even a little bit less enthusiastic, only from the perspective it felt like this is a really pick-through position in free agency, and it felt like maybe an overpay. Now, the deeper dive that you take, the Chargers, coming off of two seasons with the Giants, gave Johnson a two-year $14 million contract. So he's taken a considerable pay cut, and from what I've read, Johnson was a little bit misfit in that in that Chargers defensive line. So I get that part of it as well. I think what they're going to ask him to do, number one, rejoining Daquan Jones, who is a huge Austin Johnson advocate. We talked a little bit about that already. You wrote a story on it. They play together at Penn State. They play together at Tennessee. And I think the idea is he could fit more into the role that he played there. And I would imagine Daquan Jones was selling him on the fact that they fit the player more so than forcing the player to fit the scheme. And that could potentially unlock Johnson. I'm a little bit more in on this move after thinking about it. And the way that Brandon Bean talked about him yesterday, they're really high on this guy. This checked the box. I don't think it was the Eric Armstead kind of signing, to your point. They couldn't make that kind of splash in the end, but that might be okay because this might be a little bit more of a scheme fit and like a plan fit for what they want to do.
Fits better. And, you know, you look at another player they showed interest in, they had a visit with, it was Foley Fatukasi, and he signed a one-year $5.12 million deals with the Houston Texans. So when you compare some of the players that the Bills had looked at potentially on that D-line and what they ended up getting Austin Johnson at, I think it was a pretty fair price. Players with a lot of starting experience and a lot of experience in general don't come cheap in this league. He's a really good fit in this system. If you were to lose Daquan Jones to an injury this season, I think he can plug right in and start. I think he was a player that the Bills would have considered bringing him in as a replacement for Daquan Jones had they lost him in free agency. Now, again, that would have prioritized one tech a little bit more in the draft going into the season if you would have had Austin Johnson as your starter. But I really do think that he is someone that they had in mind potentially as a replacement, and to sign him at the price tag that they did and know that you have Daquan Jones and now Johnson as the backup, that's a really good spot for you at that one tech. And, you know, I think he has the ability to get after the quarterback a little bit. At Penn State years ago, he went from about 1 to 3 to 6 sacks. He had a lot of tackles for loss, 15 in his final season. He showed that he could kind of get into the backfield, not just against the run, but also disrupt the quarterback a little bit. I think he fit better with the Giants than he did with the Chargers, to your point. So coming back into a system now where I think in this 4-3, he's going to look a lot better, a lot stronger, and he's going to be kind of a force there in the middle for this Bills team.
Pretty sure Alex Barber is one of our Shout insiders. So I'm going to get his question up on the screen. And I'm going to circle back to this really quick because I do think that it's important. This is a conversation part of it that I don't know if we fully covered earlier, but like if Hyde wants to play, where's his spot now in that safety room? And one of the things that Brandon Bean talked about was, I think they're a lot higher on Taylor Rapp, Cam Lewis, and Mike Edwards than like the consensus outside the building is on that group, right? I think they're sitting here thinking, okay, we've done enough at the position where I feel comfortable if we have to go into the season. He even mentioned DeMar Hamlin yesterday as somebody a year now removed from everything that he went through, a guy that played almost 1,000 snaps for them in place of Hyde 2 years ago. Maybe they think that with a full offseason to really fully, truly train and get back to 100%, he'll be a little bit more in the mix as a depth safety option next season. Ryan, is there even a spot to Alex's question here for Micah Hyde if he comes back to them and says, yeah, I want to come back and play? Do you trust Micah Hyde, who dealt with so many neck issues even last year, the stingers that continually kept coming back up? Or do you just want to kind of make a clean break at this point and maybe even advocate retirement for Micah Hyde? And I know that's a slippery slope. You never want to tell somebody when to hang up their cleats, but you know, it just feels like it's time in a way, doesn't it, with Micah in so many different ways?
in so many different ways. And the fact that, like you said, they're happy with Taylor Rapp. And if Bills fans really do look at the last month, month and a half of Taylor Rapp's play, I thought he came on really strong at the end of the season. Had you asked me, do I see Taylor Rapp playing a big role for this team after the first half of the season? I wouldn't have been so sure, because I thought he was kind of a slow start for him based on how he was used and how he came through the snap counts, everything else. End of the year, though, I thought he came on strong. We heard Sean McDermott rave about Mike Edwards today and how they think they can use him based on the two defenses that he came from in Kansas City and Tampa Bay before that. So, you know, they're high on him. I love the fact that Brandon Bean pointed out, hey, you know, Cam Lewis, he's another guy that they feel like they can use. So they have a lot of guys there. If Micah Hyde comes to the Bills and says, I want to come back and I want to play for you guys, one, the money has to be right. And it can't be a lot of money, unfortunately, for Micah Hyde. So that's the first concession you'd have to make. And two, you'd have to convince him on how you would utilize him, how you'd play him. And, you know, like you said, maybe it would be better off with a clean break. If he wants to play, you might say, hey, listen, if this team's offering you this much money and a starting opportunity, we can't necessarily give you that money, and we can't necessarily even offer you a guaranteed starting job. We can let you compete for it. And that might be a tough pill to swallow. So you're right. It does feel like a clean break might be needed. You don't want to sit here and say he should retire. Like you said, that's not the team's place. That's up to the player. But, you know, he has a young family. He's had some neck stingers. He's clearly thinking this out and taking his time, and more power to him. So when he ultimately decides, the Bills will, I'm sure, listen to what he has to say, especially if it's, I want to come back and play. But like you said, it might be time to close the door on Micah Hyde, let him find a place to play. You can always sign him to that one-day contract after his playing days are over. Let him retire as a member of the Bills and kind of go about your business that way.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
One thing that I didn't think of on Edwards that I think would have catapulted him at least in line with Julian Blackman for me was what Sean, you mentioned, what, you know, Sean McDermott glowing about him today, but the connections to Spagnuolo in Kansas City and then Todd Bowles in Tampa Bay, like they follow the coaching trees with these players. And I think you can kind of fit a player in to your scheme a little bit better when you've seen them play that style. And so I think, like, listen, when he's been given opportunities, I mean, Mike Edwards was the best safety on the field in the Super Bowl. Like, if you really put all of those guys next to each other in the biggest moment, and where have the Bills kind of faltered over the last couple of years? Those right. moments, right? So this big is games. A sneaky under-the-radar addition that I think maybe takes them out of rekindling things with Micah Hyde, because I think he kind of fits into that role pretty well. Alex Barber also adds in here that Taylor Rapp's big hits remind him of Poyer earlier in his career, and that's one thing about Taylor Rapp is he plays without any fear. I mean, one of the biggest hits he had this season was that really bad neck stinger injury that he had. It was a sideline hit, and you're like, man, protect yourself a little bit. But sometimes these kinds of safeties, they don't play the game like that. I'm familiar with Alex's name because we interact so much on the Shout Insider text line. He's really active in there. And if you want to join, now's a good time to do it. Anytime is. You get a 2-week free trial to check it out. Get access to me, Ryan Talbot. Anytime you have a question or a comment, we talk back and forth on the Bills. Text 716-528-6727. Start your free trial now. $3.99 a month after that. If you're feeling really froggy, send me a DM. I'll give you a 1 month free. Still got a couple codes left for that. And the Shout text line is brought to you by Carrie C. Byer, attorney with the law offices of Francis M. Litro, located at 237 Main Street in Buffalo, New York. If you or someone you know is seriously injured, give them a call, 716-852-1234, or check out LetroLaw.com. All right, I want to bring up, AJ dropped another question in here. We heard from Sean McDermott and Brandon Bean re-colon Curtis Samuel over the last 24 hours. So AJ asks, what are your thoughts on the receiver comments? Does that point you in a direction of a certain prototype player, or do you think it might be a smokescreen? Ryan, why don't we start with you here?
I don't think it's a smokescreen. I think that the Bills are looking for a certain type of receiver. And, you know, after those comments came out, I saw a lot of Bills fans saying, oh, Ladd McConkey is going to be a Bill. I think he checks a lot of boxes, the yards after the catch, the speed, you know, a lot of things they said. But he's also very similar to what the Bills already have. And that was another comment that the Bills made is, do we already have players that can kind of play the positions that he can or these prospects can? So I don't know if it pinpoints one specific player, but it's tough because you look at some of the players that you might like. I like A.D. Mitchell, but I don't necessarily think he fits what the comments were in terms of what they're looking for at receiver. So maybe he's off the board. Maybe, you know, I still think an Xavier Legette in round two makes a lot of sense for this team based on those comments. So there's certain players, certain prospects, but at the end of the day, the Bills have, I'm sure, their own system in their mind of here's this player, here's how we can utilize him. Here's why we think he's a great fit. So I don't necessarily think it pinpoints one player. What do you think?
One thing I want to dig in with Brandon over the next couple of weeks, and I think we'll have access to him one more time pre-draft, is a couple of things. Your comments there on A.D. Mitchell, we've already talked about that. Wanting to get to the heart of, okay, how do you balance skill set and upside with maybe not like the versatility or the culture fit that you think? And that's another piece of this, the versatility. Bean's comments were kind of along the line is like, how many different things can you do? Because the more that you can do, the higher up you get on their draft board. And I don't necessarily think that that's a bad thing. I think that's what yielded Khalil Shakir and what a couple of years ago landed Gabriel Davis. But are you sacrificing the high end potential talent to go get a guy that you can have do multiple things when you've really already checked a lot of boxes in your offense, right? Like you have the Dalton Kincaid, the really high upside tight end. You have the blocking potential, the red zone threat that is Dawson Knox. Then you have a collection of guys in the wide receiver room that I think do different things. All three guys, Stephon Diggs, Khalil Shakir, and Curtis Samuel, I think are all a little bit different, even if the size is similar. Do you want to add another player that skews in that direction from a size and playing profile rather than go after what I think is truly missing? And that is that true boundary separator, which I think that, and maybe it is to AJ's point, a bluff, because if you're another team and you're thinking, well, Bean's talking about going and getting one of these guys that they seem to already have in their room, maybe you don't feel like you have to trade up ahead of them to go get a guy like A.D. Mitchell. Maybe, you know, Brandon Bean's trying to play chess while everybody else is playing checkers.
It could be, and that's part of being a GM. You don't show your cards. You keep everyone wondering. You fill in roster spots so there's no glaring needs. I said this on Twitter, X, whatever you want to call it. Almost every year he's done a really good job as Bills GM of making sure there are no glaring needs or holes on this roster going into a draft. You know, the Kyrie Lemire was probably one exception where cornerback was pretty well documented as a major need. But everyone knows the Bills need a receiver or want to get a receiver, the heir apparent to Stephon Diggs, a true boundary type of guy. But in such a deep class, I don't think that teams are necessarily going to go in and say the Bills are definitely taking a wide receiver at pick 28. They're definitely not going, you know, they don't know how many they're going to take. There's so many good guys on rounds two, rounds three, that the Bills can get both yards after catch type players, boundary players, big physical receivers, depending on what they're trying to get or add to this roster. So, you know, there's so much here that I think he's guarded with his comments, and that's what a good GM does.
If you're watching on YouTube, thank you so much. We appreciate that. Hit that like button, subscribe as well. If you're watching across all the other platforms, welcome. We're almost at 1500 live here watching on an early Monday evening. I'm out in Orlando at the NFL's annual meeting. Got a chance to talk to Sean McDermott this morning, Brandon Bean last night. Little housekeeping. Get this on your calendar. 9 days from today, we are going to be live, shout live, at Two Nines Kitchen Bar inside the Whirly, the Dome on Whirly Drive. Get out there, 6 o'clock p.m. Maybe come out a little bit early. Maybe you want to show up at 4. Hit a bucket of balls in their beautiful golf dome. They got, you know, it, you go in there, Ryan, and it almost looks like a Top Golf. Like they got the, right. The computers up. You can play different games. You can play a round of 18 if you want. I believe there's so many different options. Then get over to Two Nines, get yourself some really delicious food, get yourself a beverage, settle in for Shout Live. We'll be obviously full eyes on the NFL draft. So we're going to get into all of that out there. Speaking of Alex Barber, he mentioned in the insider chat line about the fact that Sean McDermott still hasn't decided on whether or not Bobby Babich is going to call the defense. And he asked, is it poor coaching not to delegate play calling to a new defensive coordinator like Bobby Babich? And I think this is a complicated topic because the problem is, it was so good under Sean McDermott in the second half of last season that I can understand apprehension with going away from that. But at the same time, I think you want to empower a young up-and-coming guy like Babich to take over and put his stamp on this thing. But at the same time, the risk of that is if you get to the season and have to take that potentially away from him, I kind of understand why maybe McDermott's slow playing this thing. I don't have a huge problem with that, but I do think sooner rather than later, they want to try to make a decision on that.
Really important to make a decision in terms of, and maybe the decision is starting the year with McDermott, handing it off at some point, letting Bobby Babich, though, call one of the preseason games or two of the preseason games, games where you're evaluating talent, but you're also allowed to evaluate coaching and you know, why did you do this? So that way, at least Sean McDermott has something to kind of sit there with Babich and say, okay, well, let's talk about your game plan. And then after the game, what do you think? What didn't work? What worked well? There's a lot that goes to it because I would argue that this year, the defense with Sean McDermott, when they were healthy, maybe the best year of defense that the Bills had. Now, obviously, as the year went on late in the season, injuries just piled up on them. I still think he did a pretty good job of, toward the end of the regular season, that first playoff game against Pittsburgh, of using the personnel that he had at his disposal to the best of their ability, but it just caught up to them by that Kansas City game. But yeah, McDermott has been a great play caller. He had an outstanding season. I get the tough decision and tough choice. Babich was also high in demand. A lot of teams wanted to talk to him at least. They wanted him in the building. I think that he did such a good job with the secondary early on in his stint here and such a good job with the linebackers that you can tell that this is a potential future star in the coaching field. So the Bills also need to make sure they're giving him his opportunity to shine as the defensive coordinator sooner rather than later and, you know, hopefully in 2024.
I asked Sean about Joe Brady and how he's settling in, because one of the things I think we fast forward through is like, okay, he was scrambling at the end of last year. I mean, to take over midseason like that, to continue running Ken's slash Brian Daboll's offense, I'm wondering how much we're going to see a little bit of a shift this year and potentially Joe Brady kind of putting his own stamp on that offense. And I feel like Sean McDermott didn't pour any cold water on that. I think he said it's a chance for him to reset the offense in terms of terminology, the volume of the system, and potentially tightening it down a little bit. He also brought up Ronald Curry, the new quarterback's coach. They worked together in New Orleans. So I think that, Ryan, depending on how creative they want to get here, we can see a very different version of this Bills offense next season, because I think it's almost time for a departure from what was kind of built with Brian Daboll and maybe even evolving it a little bit and making it more in the image of Brady and working it around the personnel, not only with Curtis Samuel, but whoever ends up being the rookie wide receiver that they get in the draft.
Yeah. So, you know, Curtis Samuel bringing him in is obviously a big step in terms of letting this offense really be Joe Brady's offense and bringing in a weapon that already knows the system. Brady, who knows how to utilize him, that's big for this team. Those bubble screens, those quick passes that were going to Stephon Diggs could potentially go to Curtis Samuel. That's a much better fit for his skill set versus what Stephon Diggs does well. And you saw how Khalil Shakir came on late in the season. While that wasn't necessarily Joe Brady's system, you say, okay, well, this guy can, you know, yards after the catch, making big plays for this offense. I can utilize him. The Bills moved on from certain receivers, your Trent Sherfield, your Deonte Hardys, but they've also kept a lot of the same guys, whether you're talking Ty Johnson, bringing him back into the fold, whether you're talking this offensive line. I know they moved on from Mitch Morse, but that's going to look a lot of the same. Clearly, Joe Brady likes a lot of the personnel that he's inherited, but now he can kind of work with their skill sets, find ways to utilize them. I know there's a lot of criticism about the targets, the way that they use Stephon Diggs down the stretch. But like you said, to your point, Joe Brady was scrambling, and he was just trying to get the ball in Stephon Diggs' hands to the best of his ability. Full offseason now to bring in his own system, his own terminology. I think that it's going to benefit Stephon Diggs. It's going to benefit a lot of the guys here. But it's also going to benefit some of these weapons that they potentially add in the draft as well.
Thank you for the kind words, Charles. He says, Matt, great question about Tre'Davious White to Sean McDermott today. Almost made Sean tear up. And yeah, he was emotional. I actually wrote about that exchange over at the site right now. You can read the story at Syracuse.com, NewYorkUpstate.com. And, you know, this was a guy that meant a lot to the Bills over the last seven seasons. And so my question to Sean was, when you talk about Trey, when he's talked about Trey in the past, you can tell the love that he's got for him, right? Like the what he means to him. And I think that that came out not only over the years in those press conferences, but even a little bit earlier in the press conference today when he was asked about that. So I followed up and I basically said, you know, what does this mean? What was that conversation like? He doesn't want to take us necessarily into the specifics of the conversation. And I get that, but I thought it would be important to get a sense of what that conversation was like from Sean's perspective. And so I asked him about that and he had a really good answer. I'm going to try to bring it up now so I could try to play the whole clip here. Give me 1 second on the fly here. And I probably should have had this fired up before we started, but it's a really good clip. Our good friend, Matt Beauvais over at Channel 7, does a really good job. He tweeted out the video of it. And I'm going to try to, I think I should be able to share the screen here and get it up here. All right, here we go.
Oh man. I mean, emotional, right? Because it's kind of like you can't believe it's what we're discussing. And, you know, eventually it's going to come just because of the lifespan of an NFL player. But it came way too early in my mind, right? And I'm sure in his mind as well. It's to me, it's tragic in some ways because of the injuries, and had not the injuries occurred, who knows where his time in Buffalo would have taken him and us. I think he's one of the best defensive backs to ever play in Buffalo. I really believe that. He's all class all the time, and he works his tail off, and he's one of the best human beings I know, from what he came from and how he's not only lifted himself up, but lifted his family up, and the way he's lifted our team up over the years. It's just, to me, a very unfortunate situation with the injuries. And anyway, sorry. Just, you know, it's sad to see him go. It really is, him and his family. I mean, he got injured in the Miami game. Number of us went over to his house after the game, and what do you say, right? I mean, having, especially after he had just went through it the year before, what do you say? And there's nothing you can say other than just try and be there for him. And That's how I felt when we were having our conversation was, you know, it's a surreal moment.
Tough time for the Bills.
Tough time for the Bills. And, you know, the part that really stuck out to me watching that earlier today was how much he cared for Trey White. Not every coach goes over to a player's house the night that they suffer an injury like that. They care, they call, they check in. But the fact that he went over and he was, you know, with them, with some other coaches, some other players, it shows the bond that they had. And the fact that Trey White was rehabbing in Buffalo up until, you know, pretty much up until his release, showed you how much it meant to him to kind of try to get back in the fold, try to work his way back. They are always going to be linked together because that was Sean McDermott's first pick as the coach of the Buffalo Bills. And, you know, this is part of the business, whether it's the coach getting fired in some places and the players talking about how sad they are because they feel responsible, they have that bond. You also get it from the coach's perspective where, you know, this felt like it was too soon. It felt like they should have been coach and player for at least a few more years together, but most players do come and go. A lot of the greats on a lot of these teams eventually do sign elsewhere in free agency or get cut, get traded. It's the nature of the business, but it doesn't mean that it's an easy part of the business.
It was also nice to see that peek behind the curtain a little bit with Sean. Yeah. Like, it doesn't come very often with him, and that's by design for the most part. He's very robotic in these settings, and despite best efforts by myself and other members of the Bills media, it's hard to, you know, get to that level to really truly understand what some of the goings on is like behind the scenes. So it was cool to see that Trey meant a lot to a lot of people there. And like we talked about earlier in the show, it might not be the end of that story. Who knows where he goes this season and beyond this season. But obviously an impact left by him, Jordan Poyer, Micah Hyde, Mitch Morse, all the guys that have moved on this offseason. I mean, they're definitely part of this story. All right. That's about 40 minutes. That's where we wanted to go today. Don't forget April 3rd at 2-9's Kitchen Bar inside the Dome, Whirly Drive. Come out and see Shout Live with Ryan Talbot. I'm Matt Perino from Orlando. We'll be back later this week. Take care, everybody.